Hi there, and welcome to the Living with SMA podcast. We're here to have conversations about living with spinal muscular atrophy. Throughout this podcast, we will be covering lots of different topics, from preparing for university, getting the most from your personal budget, sex and relationships, and lots more. So we invite different hosts from across the SMA community to come together here. We want to answer your questions, provide you with useful tips and recommendations, and also share personal stories. So please do reach out and connect with us here at the charity SMA UK. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find the podcast useful.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Living with SMA podcast. My name is Kerry Thompson. You might remember me from the episode 13 with Ross Lannan. This, though, is my first time ever hosting my own podcast for SMA, so bear with me. I hope I do you all proud. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. So my name is Kerry Thompson. I have a rare form of muscular dystrophy. I was diagnosed at 24. I am now 42. We are going to be talking to you today about health. And I'm going to be joined by two lovely ladies, Claire and Sue. So Sue, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Sue Tucker. I have SMA type 2. I'm 56 years old and live in North Devon.
And Claire, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, thanks, Kerry. Hi, my name's Claire Gray. I have SMA type 2. I'm 52 years old. So I'm sitting in the middle of you two somewhere. And I'm living near Bristol, sort of on the outside of Bristol. Yeah, it's lovely and rainy and freezing cold today.
Yeah, it's very cold today, isn't it? So today, ladies, we are going to be talking all about mammograms and cervical screening. So a little bit about my struggles with cervical screening and mammograms. Cervical screening, I think I found probably the hardest. I fought for 10 years to even get an appointment to see somebody after I'd had a abnormality result come back. It resulted in 10 years later, me unfortunately having to go under and have a full, what I call a fanny MOT, I wrote about, where they did a biopsy, they did a smear, they changed a coil, and I had to spend a night in a high dependency ward. So mammogram wise, I found a lot easier. They were very accommodating in Milton Keynes, and it was a 2-hour appointment that I can't fault them for. But I do know that a lot of people have some real difficulties in getting mammograms and having the access to a cervical smear. So how do you ladies feel about the access? Claire, do you want to go first?
Yeah, thanks, Kerry. So for myself, accessing cervical smears hasn't been too bad. My experience has been okay. They've been quite accommodating, and they've, prior to a few years ago, would come to my home to do the smear test, which for me was easier because I got my equipment around me, you know, hoist, etc., to get me onto the bed. However, you know, it's not great doing it in your own home environment because of lighting and positioning and all those types of things. So in recent years, I've gone to the actual GP surgery and had it done by the nurse that's there. And that has given me other sort of challenges because I've had to take a couple of my own care team with me to enable the transfer onto the bed and the position again is, you know, not the best when you can't actually move yourself. It's quite humiliating, and you know, to have to do that in front of three people is not great. But on the whole, I've had a good experience because I've had easy access to get it done. But it's just the process of getting it done has been quite difficult.
So, have you had any experiences?
Not too bad. I mean, most of my examinations and things like that have all been done at home. Like you say, it's more about being, I think, having a conversation with the person that's going to do it first to make sure that you're comfortable. Positioning, I think, for us ladies is quite important. And conventional positioning is not going to work quite for a lot of people. So I explain where I can move, how I can move, and what position I'm comfortable in. For personally, for me, that's on my side. It can be done that way. A lot of people don't realize that. But I think if you have good conversations with the people that's doing it, it's not a good process. It's quite, like you say, you've got to have a lot of people, but if it's done in your own home, I think you are a bit more comfortable. You've got your own equipment and your own PAs with you. And I think that can make a whole lot of difference rather than having to go into hospital and have it done.
Do you feel, because I think where you say at home, I don't know how I feel about that because my husband's my primary carer and I obviously have my two PAs. I don't know if I could kind of feel comfortable enough to say to my two PAs, by the way, you know, can you get a stick, do what needs to be done, and feel comfortable with that? I guess the same with my husband as well, is that, you know, you have always that element of keeping a marriage, you know, a little bit where you don't want them to know everything. And I think, I don't know whether I'd feel comfortable with saying to him as well, you know, stick my legs up in the air, spread them, stick it, you know, but I don't know if I feel comfortable with that either. So I don't know. I think the home idea for some is amazing. I think I'd probably have to do it through the district nurse because I've had home visits in the past from district nurses and they've been able to, you know, do it at home and then all of a sudden it stopped. So I think I feel comfortable that aspect if they came to my house and did it, but I don't know if I'd feel comfortable asking everyone else around me. I think I would have some serious anxiety about that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, perhaps I got a bit misunderstood. The district nurses do it.
Oh, right.
You don't do it yourself.
No, it's not a home kit. So,
DIY, do it yourself.
No, so much like Sue, when I've had it at home, I've had the practice nurse come to my house. Well, not a district nurse, so to speak, but the practice nurse is just from my GP surgery has come to my house and done it with the assistance of my PA, who has had to help me in the GP surgery in subsequent years anyway. So, but yes, it is difficult, but yeah, it's not. I wouldn't like you, Kerry. I wouldn't feel happy asking, you know, a family member or my partner or whatever to do it. Anyway, you can't. It's a medical procedure, so it has to be done by a trained and qualified person. But I think, like Sue said, that initial conversation with whoever's doing it—the district nurse, the practice nurse, or whatever. Whoever a practitioner is, it is really important to have that upfront conversation with them and to explain about your needs because, especially with a condition like SMA, they're not familiar with it at all. Probably like yourself, Kerry, with muscular dystrophy, they're not familiar. They might be used to an older person or somebody with Parkinson's or MS, but not used to somebody who, like myself, who can't move anything, you know, or even position myself.
Do you feel that whenever you go for a health appointment like cervical smears or mammograms, that you have to constantly repeat yourself about what you can do, what you can't do in that one appointment? Do you feel that sometimes they listen, but then sometimes they're very, you have to repeat yourself. You have to constantly say, no, I have SMA, I can't do this. And then they'll say, can you move your leg? And you say, no, I have SMA, I can't move my leg. Do you constantly feel that it's a battle with some medical that you have to constantly repeat yourself?
For me, I have very little movement at all. The only movement I have really is in my hands. So when I say I can't do something, I literally cannot do something. And they say, well, what can you do? Well, I can't do anything. You know, well, what does that mean? Well, I can't do anything. How do you explain you can't do anything? And that's what I find really challenging and difficult, is because they don't really seem to understand when you say I can't do anything, that literally means I can't do anything. So, you know, they will still ask the question, well, can you just move yourself here? And no, I can't.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, there's, you know, when I was fighting for 10 years to get a smear test done, you feel like you fall on deaf ears. I felt like it didn't matter how many times I called the surgery to say, I need to gain access. You're telling me I need to gain access. But you're telling me that you can't accommodate me. And it would be, well, there was never be any, well, let's try something else. And it wasn't until another incident that happened where I went into my surgery and I said, enough is enough. You know, you can't keep treating me the way that you're treating me. You're saying I can't get access to a smear. You're saying I can't get access to this X, Y, and Z. And if it wasn't for the doctor, I don't think that I was speaking to. I mean, he came from gynecology. So I think maybe if I'd got a different doctor, would it be a different scenario? But to have that initial appointment with the gynecology at the hospital, to be told that you're going to have an operation because you had abnormalities 10 years ago and you couldn't gain access, it was, I was shell-shocked. I think I thought, I went into that appointment thinking, she's going to stick me on the bed, there's going to be a hoist, legs up in the air, it's all going to be okay. So then, oh, right, okay, well, no, we need to get you in and we need to get you, you know, under and do everything all at once because I don't want to put you under any, you know, more stress than you've been under. It's like a bam, wow, okay. What's going to happen when I need a smear test in 3 years' time?
Yeah. What about you, Sue? What was your experiences, you know, about telling people, and do they listen to you?
I suppose I've learned over the years, no matter what appointment it is, you have to be quite proactive in telling people what you actually can and cannot do. And I think it will, in the long run, make things go a lot smoother. It stops you getting hurt as well, because I suspect we've all experienced people that moved us wrong over the years and we've ended up becoming injured, because it happens very easily where you can pull a muscle. So I suppose I've just got used to it, and I think you just have to get used to it, isn't it? It's one of those things you just learn to do.
But should we really be used to it? shouldn't we really have the same access level as what everybody else has? Why should we just have to put up with, you know, why are people not making it easier for us to gain all of what we need to make our lives that little bit better? You know, do we really need to just say we've got to put up with it, or we've got to accommodate them? Surely they have to accommodate us.
Yeah.
You know, what would you suggest to medical people for, you know, gaining access to a mammogram, gaining access to a smear test? What would you say, what would you think would be the right course of action to make it easier for you and for other people?
I mean, my personal feeling is that when you're sent an appointment, or when you make an appointment, is that they ask everybody if they have any access needs. So, which from my experiences, I've never been asked. I've never been asked, are you a wheelchair user? Do you have to have somebody support you to do this? You know, do you have any additional needs? So if they ask that to everybody, then at least they might be a little bit more prepared before you got there. So I had an experience when I went for a mammogram where I just got called, as you do, of a woman of a certain age, to go along for a mammogram screening. And I went along and I got undressed and went in to have the x-ray carried out. And the lady just looked at me and said, oh, no, we can't possibly do you. You know, you can't reach the machine, so we can't do you. And I was quite taken aback. And there was no sort of suggestion about, should we try it this way or that way, because they were under a time limit, because each booking is under a certain time slot, which if they had known I had additional access needs, then they might have allocated an additional time or had additional people being available. And since then, I have followed it up and I have chased them and I've said, right, I want this done. I want you to allocate me more time. I want more people to be available. And I said, I want my personal assistant to be involved because they know how to move me and position me. They have said that they wouldn't be able to do that because of procedures within x-ray equipment. And so I've pointed them in the direction of the Equality Act and making reasonable adjustments, and they've said they're going to get back to me.
Wow. I mean, I must admit, my mammogram was a lot easier. They bent over backwards with my mammogram. You know, they asked me what my accessibility would need, what I would need accessibility wise. They did a 2-hour appointment. You know, they did a double up of 2-hour appointments. There was nobody else in where I was that needed anyone else's attention. They were fully all mine. You know, I had 4 nurses, 2 doctors, and, you know, this fancy chair that was purposely designed for people with disabilities to have a mammogram. So it blows my mind that for you, it was such an issue. And it still is an issue. But for me, I have no issues whatsoever. It's kind of like a postcode lottery, in that for me, gaining access to a smear test is mission impossible. But to gain a mammogram, a breeze. You know, for you, a mammogram is mission impossible.
And a smear test is quite easy.
And a smear test is easy. So, Sue, well, you know, where do you stand? How is it for you? You know, if you come back to us and say that it's all breezy easy for you, we're all moving to where you live.
I think I'm a bit in the middle, actually, because when I had my first invitation, because the ages have changed. The age now limit is 50. You get called for your fifth when you're 50. It was 47 when I was first called, and I received the letter. I was 48 when I had my first mammogram. I was received a letter from our breast screen service. Now, we're in quite a different area, I think, how we proceed our mammograms down here. We have an invitation sent from our breast screening service, which is 50 miles away. And on that letter, it did say if I had any additional needs. So I rung up the breast screening service and explained, and they said, oh, we'll have to cancel the appointment we allocated you because we use screening units, which are like big vans with the mammograms, and they park them up in supermarket car parks, and you have your screening, you're called that way. So I rang them up and explained the situation, and they said, oh, you'll have to come to Exeter, would be, so it's 50 more miles away. And I said, I can't do that. I said, I can't travel to you. You have no toilet. You have no nothing there for me to be there for that length of time. So I said, I can't do that. And they were really dismissive. They said, well, we can't do anything for you. You can't have a mammogram. So I went back to my GP. My GP, with the same with screening and any other health, women health issues, she's very good, and she referred me to my local hospital, and from there I see them and have my mammograms through the hospital. They allocated me a half an hour appointment, so I was allowed to take my PA with me. I also took some spanners, a screwdriver to dismantle my chair, because I can't sit in the ordinary mammogram chairs that they use. I need a supported seating, so I can't do that. But I can get away with taking the side off, one side at a time off the chair. And that's what you've got to do. But the only trouble is they don't realise you need to drive the chair. So I have to take the actual control box off the arm, off the chair, to drive the chair when they take the right-hand side off. So they were horrified when I came in with spanners and screwdrivers. But we did get it done, and it's sort of gone okay ever since. I've had four now.
Yeah, we have to be so inventive, don't we, about providing them with solutions about how it can be achieved, rather than them offering us ideas and solutions. It's like we always have to go ready prepared to demonstrate how it can be done, rather than them saying, well, why don't we try this? You know, they just seem to see it as one size fits all.
I guess, though, we know ourselves a lot better than they do. You know, we know our bodies, we know what we're capable of. So, yes, it would be great for them to come with ideas. But in the same sentence, I suppose it would be better coming from us, because we would be able to say, yes, you know, my left leg goes right behind my head, so you're fine. You know, whereas they could turn around to us and say, does your left leg go right behind your head? And we'd be like, sorry, what? So I guess it swings around, isn't it? In the fact is that if you work as a team and they listen to how your body works and what your needs are, but yet they bring to the table the different things that they can do. I mean, I'm always willing to try something once. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I'm always willing to try. And sometimes they're not even willing to try. And I think that's where the issue lies, isn't it? In the fact is that if you work as a collective team to get what the end game is, to have a smear test, to have a mammogram, then it's all great. If you try different things, brilliant. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You've gained more knowledge of what doesn't work. So then you can kind of look at it from a different aspect.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to, like Sue explained as well, tapping into those people that you know are going to be really supportive. Like with Sue, it's her GP who's been fantastic. My GP has been great, and I know if I get any problems with any other sort of health professionals, if I go back to my GP, she'll help me sort it out. And whilst I don't expect other health professionals to always come up with answers, no, I think it's important for us to, it's our responsibility to say what we can and we cannot do and what is possible and what's not possible. But it would be nice to have a bit more consistency where you really don't know what type of positive reaction you're going to get from the medical person you meet. You know, it's so sporadic as to whether they're going to be, you know, willing and able to accommodate your requests, or whether they're just going to say, like Sue and I, and well, we've all experienced, oh no, we can't do that, you know. And then it's it comes back to us to say, well, you have to, you know. And that's where it becomes quite tiring, because you're battling all the time, which others don't have to.
Yeah, you feel like you're hitting your head up against a brick wall, and it's that constant no, but wait a minute, no, but, and there's that cut off, isn't there, from them? There's that stern no, I'm sorry, we can't help. And that's what I had for 10 years. You know, I'm sorry, we can't help. There was no, well, let me speak to the doctor and let me see what the doctor suggests. You could not get past that receptionist to turn around and say, well, hold on a minute, but I need this test done. I need to do all of what needs to be done. And then there's that whole thing where a lot of medical people seem to think that we're not sexually active. I'm a blood, you know, I have veins running through me. I'm a hot-blooded woman where, you know, I like sex. So why are you assuming that just because I'm disabled that I don't like sex and that I'm not entitled to have a smear test? Just because, even if I wasn't, it still doesn't mean that I'm not entitled to have a smear test. You know, even if there was lumps in my boobs, and it was a cyst, and they seem to think it was a cyst, surely they should make sure it is a cyst to have a mammogram and make it accessible for me to have a mammogram. I'm lucky enough where the mammograms have been lucky. But there always seems to be, no matter where you go, one of us comes up against a fight for something that we have a right to have. And I think it's making people understand that we are still human. Just because our legs don't run us around, we have four wheels that run us around, it doesn't mean that we're not entitled to the medical that we're entitled to.
Yeah, and I think it's about informing yourselves about what you are entitled to, and being proactive about talking about that, because you know, making sure that you are aware of what screening you're entitled to because of your age, and if you're not contacted, you know, being proactive and doing that, having those initial conversations, thinking about solutions before you get there, or once you've been there and had a bad experience, how can that be resolved? And I think it's not how it should be, but I think it is down to you as, or to us as individuals, to take that lead sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, so Sue, do you have 3 tips to give to somebody that is going through battling with a cervical smear or with a mammogram? What are your 3 tips?
I think really, if you need to sort of do a bit of planning yourself, you need to ask a lot of questions. Don't be afraid to ask a heap of questions. And I don't really know. I suppose to try and find maybe somebody to talk to perhaps first. I mean, this is going to be great perhaps for people that have never had this done and think, well, I didn't think I could have that done. You may not still able to have it done. It's going to be varied But I don't know about teams. I think it's about planning and conversation is really the most important thing. And also a serious lack of equipment in hospitals also plays a lot of things. We don't have the access to the equipment when we turn up to these things as well. And there's not enough a reasonable adjustment made or any procedures put in place to cope with anybody different. I think that's the main point. But it's to keep going. If they say no, there's usually a way around it somehow.
Be persistent.
Yeah.
Claire, have you got any tips?
I think, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with Sue. It's all of those. And I think it is being, making sure that you're aware of looking on the NHS website, making sure you're aware of what screening should be available to you at certain parts of your life or points in your life, making sure you're fully informed about that, having your allies know who your allies are, who are your supporters, who can help you if things go wrong. So whether that be your GP or even your own, you know, your primary carer or personal assistant or other health professional. And then, you know, it's always, to me, it's about knowing what legislation and what rights you have, because you start mentioning the Equality Act and it's very, you quickly see a turnabout in changing attitude as soon as you start mentioning your rights in legislation. And although I don't want to be like that, sometimes just saying those words makes a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, I think my biggest tip would be don't give in. If you are, I mean, I agree with everything you both say, is that communication is key. And I think don't, if you are coming up against a brick wall constantly, it's like you say, there's ways around it. And don't give in, don't be disheartened, because unfortunately we do have to fight for an awful lot of what we're entitled to. And like you say, it's giving them that information that we are entitled to it, where they kind of say, oh, okay, yeah, no, we need to find some way to do it. And yeah, don't give in, you know, don't be disheartened. You will find that you will get angry and you'll get upset. You'll go through the motions, but in the end, when you get to that point of having those appointments, it's a sense of relief because you know that everything hopefully is going to be okay and that you've got the answers that you should have had before. So I just want to say a huge thank you to you ladies for joining me on my very first hosting of a podcast. It's been amazing to have you both to chat to. I wish you all the best in your postcode lottery of hopefully getting everything done. So yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting us, Kerry. It's really great to meet you and you, Sue, as well.
Yeah, thank you as well, Kerry, for talking to us, and hopefully we may have to spread a bit of our wisdom onto somebody else.
Here's hoping. And if anyone has any questions, then please do drop us a line. You know, you can find us on the SMA podcast. Share it, love it, like it. And yeah, if you have any questions, make sure you ask us, because we'll be willing to answer.
You've been listening to the Living with SMA podcast. We hope you can join us again next time. But in the meantime, please don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can find out more on our website at smauk.org.uk.